And so I'm assuming you have this gigantic, like, introduction where you're like, it is I, Galuin Naya, now the man of the moment, the one you've all come for, the legend that you've come to this incredible podcast for, the one you've been screaming in your dreams to, can talk to, the one, yes. The only, that one, blah, there's fire trucks going down. It's like a whole bunch of military personnel. It's like F-17s go zooming above and they leave trails, right? And then there's probably like a dog that was in the army. The dog has learned how to salute as well, you know?
It's stupid.
You're right. They're like, Sky Parkin, we love that war. You're me like.
Welcome back to the Major Award edition of Talking a Christmas Story with the cast, where every episode feels like Christmas morning, complete with the sacred Dakota ring and Ovaltine in your cup. I'm Yano Anaya, your guide on this sleigh ride into the heart of the 40th anniversary celebration in Hammond, Indiana. Today, we are unwrapping memories with Zach Ward, the legend behind the notorious Scafakis. Our digital mailbox this week was as stuffed as the Parker's turkey that the Bumpus Hound stole, brimming with tales that warm the heart as snugly as Ralphie's pink bunny suit. As we sifted through your incredible stories, we sprinkled in clues about the mastermind behind one of the movie's most iconic symbols. It's been like decoding a secret message, leading to the revelation as brilliant as the glow from the leg lamp. So gear up, detectives. It's time to piece together the puzzle and uncover the hidden message. Now let's venture back to Hammond, Indiana, where the streets became a living scene straight out of our beloved tale. There's a lot to talk about, so I won't be able to share all of it in just one episode. But picture this. Last December, the Ralphie and the gang celebration transformed the town into a nostalgic wonderland, drawing an amazing crowd of 12,000 registrants from 28 states and a sea of 6,000 attendees wove together a rich tapestry of fan passion with every individual adding their unique stitch to our collective story. The air crackled with excitement, a testament to the powerful connection that we all share. As the venue reached its capacity at 3,800 fans outside, a fervor reminiscent of Higbee's holiday rush unfolded. The sheer number of attendees created an electrifying atmosphere, so much so that unexpected surge of eagerness from our beloved fans led to a tense moment. An angry mob, if you will, eager to be a part of the magic, pressing to enter the venue. The police wouldn't even let the film crew go outside and film because they were worried things might get out of hand. That's right, we were filming a documentary. The trailer will be coming out soon, so make sure you go to achristmasstoryfamily.com and join our newsletter to be the first to learn about its release. So the fans are trying to bust through the door. The cops and my business partner are trying to calm them down. The cops bring one of the cars closer so my business partner can speak through the loudspeaker and calm them down. And the next thing you know, out of nowhere comes Peter in an act of genuine care, a leadership. Peter Billingsley, our very own Ralphie, stepped into the rain, facing the crowd with warmth and grace. He calmed the storm of anticipation, showcasing the deep bond that ties us, casting fans together in an unbreakable family. It was a moment that underscored the unbreakable bond between us, a testament to the family we built around A Christmas Story. Although Zach Ward couldn't join us in person for the festivities, his portrayal of Scafakis has left an indelible mark on the fabric of A Christmas Story. Zach, your portrayal has etched itself into the annals of holiday lore, bridging miles and decades. So let's dive into the world of Scafakis, exploring the journey, the impact, and the legacy of a character who's much more than a bully. He's a pivotal piece in our cherished holiday classic.
And so I'm assuming you have this gigantic, introduction where you're like, it is I, now the man of the moment, the one you've all come for, the legend that you've come to this incredible podcast for, the one you've been screaming in your dreams that could talk to, the one, yes. The only, that one. Oh. There's fire trucks going down. It's like there's a whole bunch of military personnel. Like F-17s go zooming above, but they leave trails, right? And then there's probably like a dog that was in the army. The dog has learned how to salute as well. You know, like, it's right. They're like, Scott Parker, we love you. What? He likes. Then it cuts to this.
Yeah.
You got the budget for all that, my friend. Yeah.
Yeah. Eventually. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Talk out the phone stick.
Cool. Explain to everybody that you made me get up earlier than I wanted to for you.
Yes.
I'm still having my first cup of coffee in the morning.
100%.
As I sit in my office in Los Angeles, and you're in the Ritz-Carlton or something.
Yes.
You can usually hear my wife doing her hair. This is how professional.
Yes, this is how we do it. And this is how we do it. Yes.
Yeah, when the scene's reality of this, just the texture. Guy, get the dad out there. It's like Sean Connery was like, they need a good schlock. Need one good schlock.
All right, cool. Yes, so we have Mr. Zach Ward, otherwise known as Scott Farkas, sitting in his living room. He's actually in good spirits, even though I asked him to wake up early for me. So you see, he's drinking his coffee and trying to get his life together this morning. So there may be some interruptions because, you know, he's Zach Ward. So, Zach, welcome to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. Yes. Awesome. So, Zach, it's been a while since the community has put their eyes on you. So let's talk about what's going on in your life really quickly. What's happening with you?
Let's see. I just had the memorial to my father. That was this last weekend.
Yeah, my condolences to you, boss. My condolences. I mean,
yeah. He passed away in December 19th. 2023, he had Alzheimer's, was suffering from Alzheimer's for the last 4 years of his life. It was brutal. It was horrible. And it's strange because it's at a certain point, it's very sad, but there's also a sense of thank God he's out of pain and this horrible journey is over for him. So it's strange because usually people have someone die in their life. Like when your dad passed, and it was impact, and you know, it happened, and then you had to deal with it. This kind of reversed. You have to deal with it, and you're waiting and dreading and the finality of it. I mean, the reality is we all die, and we have to prepare for that. So the joy of it was that for the memorial, my brother was out, and my sister came out, and I don't think been in the same room together for over a decade because she's he's in Hawaii. So that was wonderful. And so that's just happened. It's a big part of my life. My movie, Patsy Lee. It was originally called Patsy Lee and the Keepers of the Five Kingdoms. And
yes.
It's called Keepers of the Five Kingdoms. That's going to be coming out in June.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm super excited about that, Zach. I really am. Cause, you know, you've showed me a lot of trailers and stuff, and it looks amazing.
Yeah, here's the poster. Won't look great up there.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so that's a big deal, and we have a strike coming up here in Los Angeles. Another strike for IATSE coming up in June, and lots of little things going on, working on lots of other projects, finishing off a couple of films. My partner and my business partner and I have a studio, and we make movies for other companies as well as for our own production shingle. So busy, busy. trying to finish the projects and finding new projects and living the somebody else's dream at the mall.
Right. Well, thank you, man. We greatly appreciate you sharing. And, you know, I mean, I know we can have the topical conversations about our dads, you know, passing away. But I know for me personally, when you talk about it, and it brings back a lot of memories about that roller coaster that I went through as well, man. Of course, you know, in my mind, it's like I'm hugging you because, you know, we've been brothers. We've known each other for forever, 40 plus years now. And I have a very similar experience, but your experience was very different because you are an adult. But, you know, I was a child. And so I got to give you a lot of love and a lot of respect for trying to maintain your composure, because I know it's not easy, man. I really do. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Yeah, man. Sure. You know this experience. Like, you go through this and you have this personal pain, and there's something this. Then you also realize everybody will experience this.
Yeah. One way at some point, somehow, some way. Lucky,
if they're lucky, because every father wants to die before their son. And sometimes they're not lucky enough to. So everybody throughout history has gone through this. And so it is a coming of age, I guess. And maybe hundreds of years ago, this would happen when you're in your 20s. Your dad would be dead because we lived till 40, 50. Yeah. And my dad was 76, and I got to experience him that long. Life is a beautiful opportunity, and it's without being religious in any way, it's a blessing. It's a rarity, and I guess the job is not to take it for granted, right?
Yeah, that's something that is an acceptance part of not taking it for granted. You know, we just go through every day, live every day. We see each other, we love each other. It's communication. We're busy. It's this and that. And at the end of the day, you know, we have this fulfillment of the whole day of experience, and not taking that for granted is something that, you know, as we get older, it's like our time is getting shorter and things are more important. Time is more important. Relationships are more important to us. So it becomes more resonating with what we're talking about. So, yeah, man. So thank you for expressing that, because being in the moment and experiencing life to its fullest is what it's all about. So. With that being said, I know that, you know, we have a lot of fans that are probably tearing up right now because they're probably experiencing a lot of the same thing. I mean, just like you said, you know, death is part of life. And I've experienced a lot of fans that have had family members that had shared this experience of A Christmas Story. You know, those little epic moments that we have with people that we meet and we realize, wow, you know, that this movie has changed their dynamic of their family unit. You know what I mean? So it's that
they all could hang their relationship on.
Yeah.
We've had these experiences when there was like a grandfather, his son, and a great great grandkid.
Yeah.
And that was we were in Cleveland, yeah. And the guy was like, "Where's the kids from A Christmas Story?" They were like, "That's us." And he's like, "You'd be my age." We're like,
yeah, no.
And it was, you know, the fact that, like, for four generations they were all sharing this experience. I think that's maybe part of the magic is maybe that's it. Maybe that's also the brilliance of Gene Shepard, is that it wasn't just like the Marvel, you know, a Marvel movie, a Disney movie, the modern films is just about like, well, if you hope enough, you'll get enough toys and then everybody will be happy. And Gene Shepard was like, I don't know. It's like his writing came from the point of, you're going to die. And life changes. And it ebbs and flows. And these moments are precious because you're going to die. And it's like the writing came from a sweet sadness. The whole script, the whole story is like this reflection of his childhood, which only comes when you're old enough to miss your childhood, right? When you're in your teens and your 20s, you don't care.
Go to YouTube, yeah.
You assume you'll be youngish forever. So,
right.
It's that the movie has the attitude of someone who's lost their father or their mother and speaks from a point of pain and lust.
Yeah.
And the type of love that you only get from having pain. And I think there's a beauty to that. The fact that we got to, that's why it works for little kids, parents, and great and grandparents like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So on another note, that tethering of what you talked about between the family unit, that's something that also literally ties us into that family unit, obviously, because we are the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we're the greatest.
And that's why the Smithsonian has recognized us as legends. Like, literally, it's not just we're a legend of the movie, but we have the capacity to influence family unit. And that there's like that's a
with the president this year. I think we'd probably do pretty well.
Do that. Do what?
We should run for president this year. I think we'd do pretty
well. Both of us together as
what?
I mean, we got a good chance.
You're right.
That'd be amazing. All right. Well, let's go ahead and I've got some questions from some fans that are dying to hear from you. And so these kids, these adults, of course, everybody has their unique way of asking questions. And, you know, I like to say that, you know, I had this conversation with Scotty the other day is that, you know, we've been repeating a lot of these answers for 20 years. And, you know, I actually talked to Ian about it as well. And, you know, Ian was like, it's like redundant. Like we have these same questions over and over. We know this is happening. But the honest truth is that we have only tapped into maybe a tenth of a percent of all of the fans over 20 years of those who actually come to see us. If we know that there are 40 million fans out there, there's no way over the 20 years that we've seen 100,000 fans, maybe close to it. Maybe, you know what I mean? But there's such an untapped market of those that have never been able to know what that answer is, because I see it all over the place now. So it, you know, for us, it becomes redundant. But still, you know, the uniqueness of being able to answer those questions for these people is an amazing, you know, thing for them. So I'm going to dive into the first one. So this question is actually from Gettysburg, ma'am, 8437. And she asked this on YouTube from our last episode. So a question for Zach. Was it difficult to keep producing the evil laugh over and over in every single scene?
No, it was easy. I was a kid. It was fun. And Bob Clark made it a pleasure. So, honestly, as it was like playing with kids, you know, like play fighting with kids. So I felt like I was just having a good, goofy time. No part of that ever felt like work, to be honest.
Yeah, I resonate with that. That's kind of how it flowed. Was we were just retaking fun all day long. It's basically what was happening.
It was cold, but it was fun.
Oh yeah, it was cold. That's for sure. All right, Sarah R. from Columbus, Ohio. Zach, what was your favorite scene to film as Scott Farkas, and why?
Oh, the fight sequence, because I felt like I was a stuntman. And back then, The Fall Guy was a big movie, and the Bionic Man, a big TV series, and the Bionic Man were huge. So being a stuntman was the coolest thing. Those were our heroes back in the day. Evil Knievel was one of my big heroes. So during the fight scene, I felt pretty macho, even though I was the one getting beaten up. I thought it was cool. Yeah, that was my favorite.
Yeah, I remember that scene from when they dug the hole out to put the mattress in the ground for you. And then it was like, Bob was like, okay, well, what he's doing this, I want you to jump off that T model and come, you know, tap on him and be like, hey, 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 and then turn around and hit Grover Dill. I was like, yes, I get to fling myself back on this little pad in the snow. It was like, it was super fun. So
yeah,
I remember those. I remember those days. And it was just like this big, thick gymnastics pad, right? So it bring back a lot of cool memories.
It was like us being John Wick. you know.
Basically, yes. All right, next question from Michael T. He's from L.A. In California, obviously. So did you and Ralphie ever hang out off sets, or was the on-screen rivalry kept on set?
The on-screen rivalry was kept 90% of the time. And then there was, remember, we all went to Niagara Falls.
We did.
You and me and Peter, right?
Yep.
So we had our moms with us because we were little kids. And so Yano and his mom and Peter and his mom and me and my mom, we went to Niagara Falls.
And it was frozen. And it was frozen.
It was frozen. So cool. It looked like something from a Disney.
From Frozen.
Yeah, looked like Frozen. And icicles that were like, well, I can't even show you. But icicles that were like 3 feet around and 20 feet high.
Yes.
Like the mist, it came off the falls, just coated everything in ice. And it was awesome. So we hung out a very small amount, but 99% of the time, Bob wanted us to stay separate from Peter to create that tension that Peter didn't get overly familiar with us. And I think it worked really well.
It actually did. I agree with that a lot. All right. Next question from Emily D. She's in Boston, Massachusetts. So how did you, Zach, prepare to play the role of a bully? Did you draw inspiration from anywhere specific?
Playing the role of the bully, I had gone to 8 different schools before junior high, so I had been bullied a lot. My mom was an actress. I traveled to different cities, different towns with her, and I was always the new kid in different schools. New kid, named Zach. There were no other Zachs back then. Red hair, and then miniature little name to the bell.
You were an eyesore, right?
I was beating my way up. Like that, they're like, kill him. There's one of those Frankenstein movies where you have the villagers all gather together with like pitchforks and leave torches and be like, kill the beast.
That was you.
But I got through that a lot of times. You know, I got through that a lot of times watching other kids assert their position of dominance and get familiar with what that was like. And I know that sounds trite, but the repeated exposure to the process gave me an experience that was different than most kids, because most kids went to high school and they grew up with the same bunch of kids in grade 1 through whatever, and then they transitioned to junior high and then high. But I literally, there were 7 schools by the time I was in grade 8. I had done 7 schools by the time.
Wow.
So I had been the new kid at 7 different schools, dude, as a little boy with no dad. And in Canada, I didn't play hockey. So all these things that make you stand out, and standing out and being different is not what you want to do in the 70s. It was not. You wanted to be named Paul and you wanted to have brown hair. And you wanted to be your dad and mom to show up and take you to hockey practice. That's what you wanted. So the opportunity of being that person over and over again, it allowed me to see the process and kind of be familiar with it. So this makes sense. When someone makes fun of you when you're a kid, and you, everybody will remember this, you walk home and someone's like, they go, whatever, Carrot Top, call me Carrot Top. And I'd be upset. I'd be walking home after school, like, you know, you're a Carrot Top. And I'd be, you know, that moment where you're sulking yourself and you're upset.
Of course. Well,
if someone calls you a Carrot Top like 3 or 4 times, you actually work through the problem and come up with a rebuttal. And I remember one of my first jokes I ever made was like grade 2, because that was like my 3rd school by grade 7.
Jeez. Right? Yeah.
So when someone called me a Carrot Top, I'm like, Carrot Tops are green, or can't your mom afford vegetables?
Oh,
snap, right? Right.
Ain't that the truth, though, right? Oh, that's a good comeback. I mean, that's
I had time to practice that. And, yeah. And because I was exposed to it over and over again, I think I was conditioned to see it differently as opposed to just react. So when I got to be the bully, I had a lot of bullies to draw upon as reference. And I could remember the way that they had treated me. And it was actually, for me, it was a form of revenge.
Yeah.
Because I got to mock and belittle them to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. Because I always thought, I always found that bullies, most of the time, were weak. They were straw dogs. They
were not smart.
Paper tigers. They didn't have the gumption to back it up. They had fake mouths. When push came to shove, they folded. Now, there were some guys who were straight up terrifying. But then most of them, I'd say about 80%, were just big mouth jackasses. So making fun of them made me feel really good. And apparently I was a vindictive little kid. So there's a long-winded answer.
So it was drawing on life's experiences that brought forth Scott Farkas of what he is today. All right. Awesome. All right. Next one is from the classic film kid from Instagram. And he asks, or she asks, because doesn't know if it's a female or a male. Zach, has playing Scott Farkas affected the roles you choose now as an actor?
It hasn't affected the roles I choose. It's affected the roles I get offered because people see me as somebody who can play that very, very well. As I'm known for it, they automatically sort of gravitate to the idea that I'm an asshole or a lovable jerk type of character. I've got sort of a brusque, sarcastic, sardonic demeanor. I think it's given me... People see me in that light first before they see me in others. So it's been an opportunity and it's been a challenge.
All right, next one from Marcus W. from Atlanta, Georgia. Wants to know, was there any improvised moments from you in the movie that made the final cut?
Beating the crap out of you.
Yeah, that was improvised.
Yeah.
It was just go and keep going.
Why is that funny?
And keep going. No, don't cut. Don't cut. Just keep going. Keep nailing him.
The arm. Don't go. And the other one, honestly, I remember when I was cranking RD, because RD, you can watch it in the performance.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember.
Well, Uncle, and he did it like such a little wuss. And so I just like cranked his arm up and he went, that's me.
Improvising.
Yeah, that whole money improvisation. People see me as such a jerk. I don't know why.
I mean, it's all perception.
So,
all right, next question from Jennifer S. From Austin, Texas. Is curious, looking back, what advice would you give to your younger self about acting and life in general?
Wow, God, that's a lot of conversation.
Right.
Don't drink alcohol. Don't fall in love with the taste of alcohol. Leave that alone. Focus on your mental well-being and building yourself up as best you can. Invest in yourself with everything you do so that you can be more for others. And then you can have the right type of energy gravitate to yourself. Because when you're a young man and you're desperate for approval as an actor, then attract is people who want to take advantage of desperate people. So when you're desperate for attention, they feel it. They come a calling, and they take advantage of you when they can. That said, as an actor, writing is fantastic. Madly love writing. The opportunity to create worlds. I wish I started writing when I was a kid, but I never transitioned it into script writing until much later in my life. Not until 2004 that I started writing scripts. Got 20 years ago. So yeah, I started writing when I was in junior school. I fell in love with books. I fell in love with writing, and I was really good at it, but I didn't transition into script writing. Invest in either the stock market or in housing. That would be the other thing. So that you can create a padding for yourself to have options. And I think that's with any artistic opportunity. Live way below your means. If you make $100,000, you tell everybody you made $10,000. You make sure that that money goes towards investing in opportunities that bring you money and create the padding of life that we all know is the most precious options. What are you doing today? Nothing. I don't have to. That is priceless. I would rather hang out with my wife and sit on the back deck with a cup of coffee and my cat in the sunshine than be running around chasing a dollar. And
yes,
I've been able to create certain opportunities in my life because of really hard work. And there's a saying, you have either the regret of discipline. No, you have there's the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. So, for example, our boy here, Yahoo, he's stacked like a brick crap house, right? Let's use working out. You can either go to the gym, get a little education, do it for 45 minutes a day, not a ton. You'll need 2 hours, don't need three. But the pain of going every single day or every other day for your entire life. Oh. And then, or you can have the pain of regretting that you didn't when you're in your 50s or your 40s and you're fat and your back is messed up and you can't play with your kids. Or when you lift up one of your kids, your back goes out. So you have either the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. And honestly, I don't even think it's polling because the experience you have by making yourself do something that you're intimidated by is what makes you fall in love with life and figure out who you are as a person. So that's the long-winded advice I would give to myself if I were a kid.
It's a great answer. Yeah, Jennifer, that was an amazing question because that brought out a lot of really, really good information. So next question is from Kevin L. From Chicago, Illinois. He seeks some insight. So, Zach, how did fans react to you in real life after seeing you with Scott Farkas? Any interesting encounters that you remember?
When the original film came out, no, not so much. I wasn't invited to the premiere in the United States. I was in Toronto. It did not have a big impact in theaters in the United States, as far as I'm aware, but definitely not in Canada. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Nobody really cared. And slowly over time, they took notice of the film because of the quality of the movie. In a weird way, it was such a gift that nobody cared because this was the 80s. That was a time of it was Gary Coleman's show. What you talking about, Willis? It was a time of child stars blowing up, being crazy, doing lots of cocaine, ending up in the ghetto or having horrible experiences in Hollywood. And I didn't have any of that. I had a very regular life growing up, and in the sense that my mom's an actress, but she was looking for work, wasn't famous, wasn't rich. Christmas Story only started to affect my life in later years. Like 5 years later, people are like, hey, I've seen that movie. I like that thing. And that's when it started to really have its impact. It was about the 20th anniversary is what it really dominated and took position as. This is a great movie, piece of Americana, Smithsonian Institute, national treasure type of thing. But the sidebar, and I don't know if you've ever had this shout out, is people recognize me before. They were nowhere. So they'd see me and be like, hey, how do I know you? I'm like, we never met. Like, yeah, you dated my sister. I'm like, hey. They would literally start fights with me. So I got into fist fighting stuff. So much. Because they, but the thing that exasperated the whole issue was that because of Scott Farkas, like I said, people saw me as the roguish bad guy, as the jackass. Yeah. So I did a lot of TV shows as a guest star where I was the dick. So people would see me in person and be like, you're a dick. Like, no, 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 I just played one on TV. So, it got my ass kicked more than once. Yeah.
Right. All right. Retro movie geek on Twitter. So what's one thing you took away from working on A Christmas Story that has stayed with you through your career?
Bob Clark's directing style. Patience, listening, being present. Back when I was a kid, I did commercials. I did other TV shows after Christmas Story. And directors were mean. They were scary guys. They were screaming. They were yelling. Like, even though you were a young guy, they're like, what the bleep wrong with you? Get it over there. And they were like, these tyrants.
I hear that too, yeah.
Yeah, right? There was a weird vibe. Like, it was cool for them to be psychotic assholes. And Bob Clark was the opposite. Dude, he was such a kind, like, he's the guy you wanted to just give a big hug to. But he wasn't jacking around. He was serious. But it's like the way an uncle talks to their son, or the way an uncle talks to a nephew when, like, the kid's screwing up. And he's like, hey, come on. Now you can do this. Let's focus up, all right? No, let's go again. Good. Okay, let's go again. And he had this sense of calm in the center of the storm. And that really, for me as a young boy who didn't have a dad in the house, it really was not just a father figure, but because I wasn't with him long enough, but like it was an example of how masculinity and how being a man can be gentle, but strong and a leader in such a way that inspires everybody as opposed to yelling at everybody. And it really was, it had a big effect on my life.
Yeah, I can resonate with that as well. I remember Bob Clark being that person that was like super excited every day. Like it was magical for him to direct. And that's what I remember about his energy. And he was just so into every single character. And it was like, he already had this vision. It was just guiding us, all of us, to fulfill that vision he already had. I remember that energy. It was really fun to work with. I do remember that. All right. So Sophia P. from San Francisco, California asks, do you have any cherished memories from the set of A Christmas Story that you haven't shared publicly before? Any cherished memories?
That I've never shared before? I don't think so. I don't think any ones that I haven't shared before. Meeting Yano. I think you and I met in the wardrobe room.
We did.
On our gear.
Outfitted.
Characters.
Yep.
And it... Do you ever see those videos on YouTube where it's like kids meet up for like a play date and they're like toddlers or they're four and they walk in like, that is exactly how we were. We're like, hello, new friend.
I remember that feeling where walking in the wardrobe and there's Zach Ward, because I see his name on paper. I don't know who this guy was, right? And so I see his name on paper. I know he's playing like literally my partner in the movie. So it was almost like I knew your character. I just didn't know who you were as Grover Dill, since our things were switched up at that time. But, or I should say your lines, you were still Scott Farkas, but our lines were switched, right? So when we finally met, it was like, that's who my partner in crime is in this movie. It was like, I felt almost like I felt like I had you as my support. Like, literally, I felt like it was like we finally became that team. And that's how I...
Yeah, and it's also good when we both looked at each other, we were like, does that make sense? Right? Because all I want to see you are. We're like, oh, that's cool. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I get it.
Other actors, even though you're like 13 years old, you've been around enough other actors that they were, hey, you could tell if they're dicks. You could tell.
Yeah.
But we were like, hey, that was fun.
Yeah, it was cool. That was awesome. All right. So that's all the questions we have from the fans currently. If you fans would love to ask more questions, please post them down below. Make sure that you hit that notification or subscribe, hit that notifications bell so that you always will continue to get notifications from us when we post a new podcast or everything else that we're actually doing. So we'd like to jump into a fun little game that we've created. It's actually called... True or Farkas. And so this is something that was created. I think this is kind of a fun little thing to do. I know, right? But I think that the fans will have a giggle and we might have a giggle as well. So so basically, I'll ask a question and all you get to do is just answer true or Farkas. And if you want to expand on that, you can. It's up to you. So first question is, you've directed a feature film about the untold story of a superhero whose only power is unclogging sinks. True or Farkas?
True. That is true. I'm very proud of this. It's the Roto-Rooter Man story. A historical perspective. And using the classical structure of... it's like Mario Brothers meets Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So
one
brother falls into the radioactive ooze and is able to transform his body into a highly acidic state and then go through tubes and come out the other side covered in fecal matter. It makes it difficult for him to get a lot of good press coverage, but that's the concept. Yeah, I'm not doing that. So please.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. In your spare time, you're an avid photographer, mainly capturing squirrels in dramatic poses. True or Farkas?
True. I think you have some footage of that.
And how is that working out for you?
It's a dangerous hobby, I admit, but it's incredibly satisfying, especially if you play the Avengers theme music every time they hit the ground with that one little arm up and that serious look in their face. It's exciting.
It's a serious skill to be able to capture that. So, you know, kudos to you.
You've got to be able to read your model. You know, you have one with the squirrel.
All right, next question. Zach, before your big break, you seriously considered a career as a professional leg lamp polisher. True or Farkas?
That would be Farkas.
Your hidden talent is being able to recite A Christmas Story backwards in pig Latin. True or Farkas?
Farkas there, my friend.
You've written a screenplay about a world where Christmas sweaters are the ultimate currency. True or Farkas?
Farkas, but it's not a bad idea. There could be something there.
You're deeply involved in charity work, especially in the training of reindeer for inner city sleigh rides. True or Farkas?
You can't do it on the inner city because all that reindeer crap, all over the, it would be really a problem unless you were using it to stop the crack dealers.
Oh, man. All right. Zach, you're gearing up to star in a Broadway show titled The Ballad of Scott Farkas, A Bully's Tale. True or Farkas?
I would love to be doing that. That would actually, if only I could sing.
Well, I mean, we can train you how to sing the best that you can. It might not be the greatest, but
I think there's certain things in my life that are part of my
Oh my God, I'm dying. Yeah. All right. So your pet, named after a character from A Christmas Story, is actually a goldfish with a penchant for BB guns. True or Farkas?
How would a fish be able to relate to a BB gun, let alone hold a BB gun? No, it's a spear gun. That's just ridiculous. Farkas.
All right. Zach, you've kept in touch with your cast members by starting a secret society dedicated to the appreciation of pink bunny suits. True or Farkas?
Nobody likes those things. They're horrible. They're a nightmare fuel. I always cry inside when I see folk grown men wearing one. I'm like,
Have you ever done the research on where that actually that concept came from?
No. You got something for me?
Well, since we were kind of doing a lot of in-depth research about every like little nook and crannies of things that, you know, we don't necessarily know about the movie, but that pink bunny suit was actually designed by the marketing director's girlfriend from Playboy. And so she designed it with the bunny ears as a full body suit, and they wanted it pink. She did the first sewing. All that.
For the one in the movie?
For the one in the movie, yes. Yeah, when they had it manufactured.
So the woman who designed it worked for Playboy?
No, she didn't. So she was the girlfriend of the marketing director that worked for Playboy who got hired. And that's where the idea for the bunny ears came from.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do we know what it was going to be originally?
Nope. Didn't disclose that information. It was just very kind of brief that she was the one that came up with the original concept after they wanted something to be sewn up. And so she just mimicked the bunny ears from Playboy.
Interesting. Interesting.
There's a lot, and that kind of tied into, you know, the first article about Grover Dill in Playboy that Gene Shepard did. You know what I mean? So that was
I know Scott Farkas in The Murderous Mariah is 1967. They got stopped that. That Playboy.
I think it was a 1968 edition or 69 edition about Grover Dill. You know. All right, cool, man. Well, that's it for today's episode. Zach, you got anything that you would love to say to our entire fan base?
Thank you for being part of our lives. Thank you for your kindness. Love one another. Life is short. Enjoy it. Be kind. Be joyous.
Awesome.
Well,
thank you, brother. Appreciate you, man. It was fun hanging out and talking and laughing and talking, since we don't really get to do this very often, even though we do talk a lot.
Crack of the ass in the morning.
Crack of the ass in the morning, yes. So now, you know, since you are on the West Coast, you get to fulfill the rest of your day and enjoy and have fun and do whatever other work that you got to get done. Absolutely, yes.
We're trying to weasel in that I should be thanking you for this.
Yes. Cool. All right, brother. I love you, man. As we draw this episode to a close, let's remember that the heart of A Christmas Story beats strongest in the shared joy and connections it fosters. The 40th anniversary event in Hammond was a vivid reminder of the film's enduring legacy, a beacon for fans across the generations. Thank you for joining us on Talking A Christmas Story with the cast. I'm Yano Anaya, wishing you the warmth of a Christmas morning with every listen. Don't forget to subscribe and share your thoughts on today's journey. Merry listening. And until next time, may your days be merry, bright, and filled with the spirit of A Christmas Story. Oh, and remember, This year is still the 40th anniversary, and we, the cast, have a lot more to come. We're keeping the celebration going all year long till November 18th, which is our new holiday that we celebrate in Ohio called A Christmas Story Family Day. And we've got a new one on December 16th in Hammond, Indiana, called A Christmas Story Family Day as well. So remember to hit the bell notifications and subscribe so that you'll never miss out on upcoming episodes and incredible news. Love you guys and see you next time.
Oh my God, I shot my eye out.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.